This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
610, good morning. Hi, how are you? Nick DiGilio coming up in a few minutes. Get a review of some of the big movies opening this weekend. You got your Batman versus Superman situation. Is that that's got to be the only big movie, right? Is there another big movie this weekend?
That's the big one.
My
Fat Greek Wedding 2 is coming out this weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 versus My Big Fat Greek Wedding 1? Is it all just one big rivalry weekend at the movies?
It could be. I don't know. Anna and I are still kind of bitter. We never got our invitation.
Reviews aren't good, by the way.
I know. You know what? She waited.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
How was Arizona?
It was great. I missed you guys. Weather was nice, though. Played a little golf. Saw a few Cubs games. Sat in front of Ryan Sandberg at one of the games.
Yeah, tell him that story. That's
I saw the picture. She sent me the picture, and it didn't tell me who it was. And you'd have to see the picture to understand this. But I thought it was Eric Estrada from Chips.
I know. Yeah,
he was incognito.
He's got the shades on. But it was funny. He actually started talking to me, the gentleman he was with. They were arguing over what you put on a Chicago-style hot dog. And I was listening. I was facing forward watching the game, listening to this discussion go on.
And then he asked you to be a consultant?
Yeah, and then he tapped me on the shoulder. And I thought, oh, God, I don't want to get into this guy's conversation. And I turned and looked. And as I'm telling Ryan Sandberg what's on a Chicago-style hot dog.
How does he not know?
He said he had never had Portillo's.
What?
So his wife went to go get him a hot dog, and
Kevin, I know you don't eat anymore, Kevin. But what are you doing about this?
What the hell's going on out here?
I mean, seriously, Ryan Sandberg, how has he not had a Portillo's hot dog or a beef? I was out in Arizona a week ago, and I had Portillo's there. They have Portillo's at the Cubs Park.
Well, that's what Portillo's he was doing, right? His wife made a run to Portillo's.
Yeah, they have Portillo's at the game.
Italian beef.
At
I don't know about
park,
the hot dogs.
Say.
I think they just sell the beefs.
No, apparently they do because she brought him one back.
Yeah,
right?
She brought him
well,
a hot dog.
Well, they have Chicago-style hot dogs, not from the Portillo's stand, though.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Mm. Yeah. So that's what shows. So she brought him one back, and yeah, and then it was funny because I was describing what you put on it, you know, the relish and the celery salt and the mustard, no ketchup, and I went, oh, my God, I didn't realize it was you, and he started laughing, and then I said, we have to take a selfie, and we did.
And did he leave you alone after that? Or were you bothered by Rhino?
No. He was great. We were talking about, I said, why don't they put Matt Merton in? No, I didn't ask him that at all. But I did think it was kind of telling that the one game that they did put Matt Merton in, I was at. It was an away game.
Yeah, well, we called the Cubs and said, could you throw our bone on this?
Yeah, exactly.
And so what happened? What did he do in that
he
game?
He got a single.
Oh.
Single
that's
up
exciting.
The middle. Sick. Yeah.
That blew you a kiss.
Two outs in an inning.
And then he turned and tipped his batting helmet to you.
He did. Oh. He kind of did.
Did he dedicate it to you,
fist
the single?
Fist bump to the heart, two fingers in the air.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Oh, that was in my mind.
I could make the team right there.
Exactly.
Now, while you were out, Kevin has basically abandoned the show. And
yesterday,
he was doing sports for Row.
I heard that, too.
He, along with his sidekick, Violetta Zippity-Duda, took over the show. It was like a millennial insurrection.
Really?
Mm-hmm. For about a half hour, Ocon and Anna DeVlantis took a back seat. And the Millennials drove the show.
I'm sorry, wait. Ro Khan took a backseat to the Millennials?
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Yeah, he must have had like an upset stomach or something. That's why he left the
It was all based off a story out of New York of a tech company run entirely by Millennials, and one of the Millennials, it backfired on them. The guy told his boss that his friend had died and took a week off, and he started blogging and tweeting about his time off from the work, and his boss picked up on it.
So instead of actually running the company, the Millennials just decided they would run the company into the ground.
So we were in charge for about a half hour.
How badly did you screw up the show?
How did you do the show and you're on your phones all the time?
Yeah.
Well, we were getting feedback as the show was going on. It was like live tweeting and all that stuff. So we were able to implement some new rules and changes we thought we could apply to the radio station here in the show.
Oh.
What did the listeners think of you taking over
the
show?
Oh, they enjoyed it. They loved it. Yeah. Yeah, they got a kick out of it.
Here's one of the things. This is funny, too, because Kevin found out it's a little harder than it looks. So, because Ro is notoriously late. Ro makes this show look like it's the perfect running train. And Ro runs like 15, 20 minutes late to news. You know, sometimes he'll just forget where he is.
Right.
You actually ran the show late for news.
I was a bit late. I was a bit late, and we had implemented a new rule. Anytime you're late for news, you throw $5 into a mason jar in the newsroom, and all the money gets dispersed at the end of the week throughout the station.
Dispersed to the millennials?
To charity?
No, to everyone, because we like to share with everyone. So.
Oh, good. The money goes to you?
To everyone at the radio station.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Got it. Yeah.
So we were a minute late.
Haven't seen any of that, have you?
No, I haven't seen any of that either.
I don't think the three of us need it.
Well, it just started yesterday. It hasn't even been 24 hours.
Okay.
But we were 60 seconds late, and to pay for the $5 fee, we started a GoFundMe page.
Full millennial fashion. Did you really?
Good. So we're covered.
Good. That's fantastic.
Oh, I'll make a donation
here,
to that.
I'll give you $5 out right now.
I'll give you, I think I have like $2.
Well, you're already anticipating being late to news.
Oh, I promise you I'm late. I'm late to traffic
late for
already.
Traffic.
It's the first thing. Here's $20. That's four times. I'll be late four times already.
Perfect.
I'm paying in advance.
We'll put it in a Mason.
Kevin, my donation's in here too.
What's the name of your GoFundMe page?
It's the Kevin and Violetta. GoFundMe.com/Kevin and Violetta.
Is it really?
The problem is nobody can find it because nobody can spell Violetta.
Right. Podramatic is the last name. Good luck.
What do you call her? Zippity Doodah?
Violetta Zippity Doodah.
I think you called her Padre Hoohe one time.
Yeah, well, Padre Hoohe is a different situation.
Call her Veil Pod.
Oh, I missed you guys.
Yeah, well, see, this is what happens when you leave.
Boy, I missed y'all.
Next time they shine your light in the sky, don't go to it. The bat is dead. Bury it. Consider this mercy.
Tell me. Do you bleed?
Seriously? Wow. Nick DiGilio's here. Nick is at Nick D Show. Yeah, I hope the movie's better than the clip.
I have not seen it. I am seeing it. I'm going to waste 2 hours and 40 minutes of my life Friday afternoon to see it. But they screened it Tuesday night. There was a big press screening on Tuesday night, and my phone began buzzing with texts from my critic colleagues, and there was not one remotely positive text that I got. So,
who's getting most of the blame?
Zack Snyder, the director, is getting most of the blame. Actually, the guy who's going to come out, probably the guy who's coming out with, I was wrong on my prediction. I said that if this thing tanks, and it's gonna, I thought that everybody would blame Affleck because he's the new Batman. But he apparently is getting the best reviews of anything in the movie. Apparently, he's the best thing in the film.
Wow.
The reviews have been just, I don't know if you've seen some of the reviews online, but they've been devastating. I mean, just this movie is getting ripped apart.
Well, the last Superman movie, Superman Lives or whatever.
It was called Man of Steel. It was awful. Yeah, it was awful.
He's not buyable to me as Superman. I'm sorry.
Why, too pretty?
I don't know. I don't want to flash back to Christopher Reeve or the other Supermans, but he just doesn't do it for me.
Well, the thing about this is this take that Zack Snyder, the director, has on Superman, in my opinion, is all wrong. Because the Batman films that Christopher Nolan made became so hugely popular and critically acclaimed, now everybody seems to think that if you're going to make a hero, you got a superhero, and you want to take it seriously, he's got to be dark and brooding and sad and damaged, because Batman was all that. But that's not Superman. Like, historically, that's not the Superman character. He's not a brooding, guilt-ridden dude. Batman is, but Superman isn't. And when they made Man of Steel, they tried to Nolanize it. They tried to Christopher Nolanize Superman. And at the heart of that character, it's all wrong. So I agree with you, Andre. Hiring this guy, this Henry Cavill guy, to play the part, he's too dark. He takes it way too seriously. The perfect Superman, it is Christopher Reeve. Christopher Reeve was perfect. And the way they handled it was great. There was a twinkle in his eye. You bought him as Clark Kent. It didn't work in Man of Steel, and I don't think it's going to work in this one either.
Cavill? Whatever. What is his name?
Cavill? I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not fun. There's no fun there. There's got to be a little fun with Superman, right?
Agree with you. I absolutely agree with you, man. I mean, if you look at the first two Superman movies that Richard Donner made, they're really fun. They're great. They're very, very true to the DC character and that universe. and they're also full of great villains and great special effects. Superman 2 is still one of my favorite comic book movies of all time to this day.
And I love a guy that flies around and beats up the world's bad guys who's unsure of himself with women. I mean, that makes total sense, because what's the most powerful element in the universe outside of kryptonite? Women.
Yeah.
That's it.
And the other reason why this thing is 2 hours and 40 minutes long, DC is desperately trying to follow the very successful template that Marvel has done. Now, the Marvel movies have been, you know, off the charts. The movies are making a huge amount of money. There's sequel after sequel after sequel. They've got very successful television series now, Marvel. So DC is trying to do that by starting this whole Justice League thing. See, Marvel's got the Avengers, and now DC wants their Justice League. And so they're introducing three extra characters in this movie. And that's why it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. Like, Aquaman is in this movie. And, of course, Wonder Woman is in this movie, too. And, you know, if we've learned anything from the past from unsuccessful superhero and movies, is don't overcrowd them. Remember when the Batman movies, when Joel Schumacher took over the Batman series early? Mm-hmm. And every movie, every subsequent movie had like seven villains in it. And it's just, you can't do that, and that's what they're doing here.
What about my big fat Greek baklava?
Well, you know, I'm not a fan of the first one at all. So I'm not really looking forward to it. And once again, like Zoolander, we had to wait 15 years for this one. Are there a lot of people waiting to see my big fat Greek wedding?
I think the entire Greek community here, that's pretty sizable.
No, you are right, though. 13 or 14 years, that's a long time for a sequel.
Yeah, it is. And it didn't pan out for Zoolander. Zoolander completely bombed. And they released Zoolander 2 15 years after the original came out, and nobody cared. Nobody went to see it. You know, my Big Fat Greek Wedding was one of those movies that was a little train that could. Nobody expected it to do anything. Nia Vardalos, nobody really knew who Nia Vardalos was. She wrote the script. It was very low budget. It was the definition, the absolute definition of a sleeper. Like, nobody expected it to do anything, and then it just kept going and going and going and going. And now 15 years later, you know, there's a bigger budget. There's a bigger cast. Everybody who's involved in the movie has gone on to other successes. So the whole feel of this movie is going to be, just by its nature, completely different than the original because of the way it was made. So,
but in the world of suspending your disbelief, the 15 years between sequels and now the daughter that they didn't have when they got married is like 25.
I know.
Where we lost 10 years there somewhere.
Yeah, I know. Evidently, they have a DeLorean at Doc Brown's house in this movie.
I don't know.
No, she's going to college, right?
Well, she's getting married.
Like 18? Oh, I thought she was going to college.
Well, yeah.
No, she's getting married. That's the
premise of the movie, right?
See, I'm getting teary-eyed already.
But isn't that the premise? She's getting married.
But she does go off to college, and then they have the whole separation.
Okay, then she's 19 or 20 or 21.
Yeah, then they plan the other wedding.
I'm still missing 5 years.
But if you guys
would... I need 5 years.
Andrea? It's like soap opera years, yes.
But you read the people, didn't you?
I did.
And you read why she waited so long.
Yes.
Because she was having, you know, fertility issues and all that, and she wanted to have a child of her own before she wrote a script with the child in it.
A lot of personal
struggles. We like
struggles,
Nia. That's very nice.
Yeah. Love Nia.
It was awesome.
We'll have Nia on next week, hopefully.
Sure, whatever.
If I can get a hold of Nikki Demakopoulos.
Yeah, whatever. Sure. Demakopoulos this. all right. Anything else opening? I guess that's it. Those two, right?
Those are the two. I mean, you know, we're going to see how well Batman versus Superman does. And in fact, I'm filling in for you Monday morning, so I'll have the box office report then.
What about Rocky versus Bullwinkle? Is that coming? Tom versus Jerry.
Tom versus Jerry. Now that I'd see. Yeah. If they made Tom a brooding alcoholic, I would see that movie.
Fred versus Barney. Come on, if we're going to do this, let's do it.
Ren versus Stimpy.
And then it got weird. All right, buddy, have a good weekend.
All right, man, take care.
See ya. That's Nick DiGilio at Nick D Show. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to station WGN.
Six 6:38, Steve Cochran Show continues. Show number 615. And we got a couple of reports from listeners that said we've got it all wrong about My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. And I don't want to spoil it, but it said something involving the parents of the parents.
Oh, the grandparents.
Yeah. So.
So Gus and what was the mom's name?
Yeah, I hear they kill a guy.
No.
Yeah, no, that's what I hear. Yeah.
Don't spoil it.
Well, I'm just a... Rick Pearson after 7. Pat Brady will be in studio with us as well. Aaron Katursky in a few minutes on Brussels. And we'll have that Joe Garagiola clip ready. We'll play that in a couple minutes as well. Before we do any of that, political roundup from yesterday. We're not going to deal with Brussels here because I said Katursky's coming up and he's actually in Brussels. But the politics now have taken to the wives of the Republican candidates, Ted Cruz's wife and Donald Trump's wife, Melania. Let's back it up one day when a super PAC ostensibly supporting Ted Cruz in Utah to try to turn off Mormons. You know, don't Mormons have a sex drive? I would think Mormons have a sex drive like anybody else.
Yeah, I would think so.
And, you know, they put out a picture of Melania from GQ when she did a nude photo spread. And she's not, I mean, she's nude in the photo, but she's covered up. She's laying down on her tummy. And it's sort of a cleavage and butt shot, that kind of thing.
Trying to show what? Oh, Melania posed nude, so don't vote for Trump?
It was, ladies and gentlemen, your next first lady, or you could vote for Ted Cruz. It was that kind of thing.
Okay, let
me just say something, because you pointed this out to
yeah.
me. Melania Trump is much more qualified than her husband.
Oh, Melania Trump
Melania
is brilliant.
Melania Trump speaks like 3 or 4 languages.
She does.
She was educated at a fine European higher education institution whose name I couldn't pronounce if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
She happens to be a beautiful woman who made a lot of money here as a model, made money there as a model, here as a model. You don't have to like models, but it's a legitimate job. It's a job that she was good at, and she made money doing it. So, in other words, the picture that the super PAC put out was Melania working.
Right.
That's her gig.
Yes.
That's her job.
Yes. After she went to the university, she's fluent, Steve, in 5 languages.
5 languages. Okay.
Slovenian, English, French, Serbian,
and
her
husband's
German.
barely fluent in one.
Right. Well, yeah, that's to be seen.
So let's just grant that she's beautiful and she has a right to be beautiful and she has a right to do her job. Ted Cruz's wife is a very attractive woman.
Yes.
And a very accomplished woman. And a woman who has done a lot of things in the world of banking.
She's very well spoken. She spoke to the City Club of Chicago about 2 weeks ago, gave a very nice speech.
And I don't like Ted Cruz any more than I like Count Chocula, his doppelganger. He's almost as nutty as Trump is. So for these two to be in a fight over their wives is ridiculous. But the super PAC puts out the Melania thing. Trump then follows with a shot saying, you better be careful, lying Ted, or I'll spill the beans on your wife. Nobody knows what the beans are. And then Trump, the 12-year-old that he is, retweets a photo last night of Melania side-by-side with Ted Cruz's wife, where they find a particularly unattractive photo of Ted Cruz's wife
next to a model picture of
Melania.
She's in the middle of speaking, so her mouth is kind of saying like,
well, anybody.
Yes.
You can find an unattractive picture of anybody.
Of course.
So they put the pictures side-by-side. It says, no need to spill the beans. Images are worth 1,000 words. In other words, Trump retweeted a picture that essentially said, my wife's prettier than yours. Na, 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 na.
I know words. I have the best words.
I know wives. I have the best wives. I'm on 3 now. So he's a dope. Ted Cruz getting involved with this is idiotic. And the Republicans continue to say, hey, Democrats, you want to keep the White House? Here you go. Just go ahead. Here, keep it.
Keep it up. Yeah, this is ridiculous. When it comes to, unless Melania or Heidi Cruz have done anything illegal, I don't even think they need to be brought up in this.
No.
I mean, come on.
No, it's ridiculous.
When you start attacking the families.
My wife's prettier than yours.
That's insane.
Okay, whatever.
And really, what are the beans? Come on.
Yeah, the beans supposedly relate to something she does or didn't do professionally in her banking job. So I don't know.
You know, now having heard how many Trump rallies and speeches, you know, and I know they go to different states. When I was in Arizona, I was watching his speech in Fountain Hills, and they give the same speech because they're stumping in different states.
Sure.
But they think that we haven't heard it already. But I love when Trump tries to explain Pfizer, great American pharmaceutical company. He always has to explain. He can't just say, well, Pfizer or Apple. We know all these companies, but he has to go into, well, Pfizer, it's a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
Apple,
it's like the two
they make iPhones.
Any speech he does, he's got to try to localize it like he knows what he's talking about. Hey, the two Corinthians, hey, that's the whole deal. That's your whole ball game.
There it is.
644. Let's clear our palates here by remembering, frankly, just a great guy. Joe Garagiola. He was a bad catcher, but a great broadcaster, and everybody loved him. Grew up with Yogi Berra when he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in the broadcaster's wing. In 1991, his friend that he knew from when they were little boys playing together on the hill in St. Louis. He referenced Yogi in a story that he told. Here's Gary Gioli at his Cooperstown speech.
My bat and my glove could not get me close to the Hall of Fame. I know that. I'm lucky, I'm proud, and I'm grateful. When I called Yogi, and we talk a lot, I said to him, Yogi, I'm going to get the Ford Frick Award. And as only Yogi would put it, you got to understand this beautiful guy. If you do, tell me so I can understand him. I mean, who else, when I was recuperating from some surgery I had, called me and said, are you playing golf? And I said, no, Yogi, I haven't played in 6 weeks. He reassured me. He said, don't worry. You always play better when you don't play. Well, I don't remember not ever knowing Yogi. We did grow up across the street. And when I said to him, Yogi, I'm coming to Cooperstown for the Ford Frick Award, he said, what took you so long? Well, to answer him, I don't know, Yogi. But we're both here. We're in different buildings. But here in Cooperstown together, I can bet you that Papa Peter and Mama Paulina Barra and Papa John and Mama Angelina are pretty proud. And we both can look down now and say, we told you not to worry about us. Look who we're hanging around with now. Thank you.
Pretty good story.
Great stuff.
Pretty good story. Joe Garagiola's acceptance speech now 25 years ago, the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown.
And, of course, Yogi Berra just died last September.
Yeah. So they're hanging out together again.
Good no question. Them.
.651, Aaron Kotursky's in Brussels. It seems we have to have a program to keep the murderers straight here, because what we thought we knew yesterday, Aaron, is not what we know today about the two men in black and the men in white, correct?
Well, we're still trying to identify the guy seen in the light-colored clothing in the airport surveillance image. The two others are believed to have been killed, suicide bombers. One of them identified as one of a pair of brothers involved in the attacks. The other, the suspected bomb maker, who has also been traced to the Paris attacks. And now we're learning that in the subway attack that was carried out by the other brother, there was a second suspected attacker who was seen on surveillance footage standing on the platform with the suicide bomber. So we may in total have five, three of whom are known dead. The authorities haven't said whether they believe this other guy on the surveillance camera escaped, or died in the attack. They haven't said what.
So yesterday, when we were on, we thought the two men in black were the brothers. Just so people understand, the brothers were split up, one at the train station and one at the airport, but both are dead.
Both are dead, and they were split up. They were known to police, they said, as small-time criminals, but in fact, one of them had been detained in Turkey along the border with Syria. The Turks deported him to the Netherlands and warned the Belgians that this guy was a potential terror fighter. But the Belgians, were told, were never able to make a firm connection to terrorists. And so he was allowed to slip through the cracks and came back to haunt this country wearing a suicide vest.
What is going on with the man in custody from the Paris attacks taken out last week? May or may not have triggered the timing of this attack. Abdellah Salim, he wants to be extradited now?
Salah Abdeslam's lawyer was in court today, said he would no longer fight extradition to France, and apparently he wants to go to France now as soon as possible. His lawyer claims that Abdeslam did not know about the Brussels attacks, but as you suggested, his capture here last Friday may have really spooked the attackers, and they may have accelerated their plans, fearing perhaps that Abdeslam was going to crack under the pressure of an interrogation. But again, we're not sure what, if anything, Abdeslam is telling the authorities or whether that theory is going to play out.
What do we know about Americans still there or missing?
there are Americans still here and missing. There's a couple from Kentucky, the Schultz couple, that has not been accounted for. The State Department says there are about a dozen Americans injured in the blast, and they still haven't been able to account for all of them. In all, 300 people injured, 31 at least dead, and we should get updated numbers from health officials here later on today.
Aaron, question for you. Brussels seems to have become kind of a hotbed where we're finding many of these cells have been living and working and plotting these attacks. There was an interview, I believe, with ABC News with the police commissioner, and he seemed a bit lackadaisical. He's saying, you know, it's a democratic right. It's a freedom. Anyone can go into the subway and can go into the airport. Is there anything that really can be done without? I mean, it's almost as though they're being reactive instead of preventative.
Well, there are real questions, I think, about the competence of the Belgian counterterrorism authorities here. And that's chiefly because this cell was allowed to operate for 4 months after the Paris attacks, seemingly under the noses of the Belgians. And there are questions about information sharing and sort of the territorial nature of policing that really seems acute here in Belgium. And no doubt all those questions are going to come up. But as the police commissioner told us, you can't just go around arresting people because they might be a terrorist. You do need to have some kind of evidence or probable cause, and they didn't have it, at least in the case of one of the brothers, even though they had been warned that he was a potential fighter.
What do you expect today through the briefing and beyond in the news cycle?
Well, who's to say? I mean, if they catch somebody, that would be, I think, significant. Otherwise, we're waiting to just learn more about the victims. We know 40 different nationalities were represented, but we haven't heard about all of them. There are people still in a coma that haven't been identified. So I think there's that piece, along with the investigative clues, and authorities are still trying to piece together all the dots that seem to connect the Brussels team with the Paris team, and whether this is one cell or an offshoot of a cell, and really troubling questions still about what may be next for Europe as the Easter holiday nears.
Yeah, and lastly, yesterday there was a report that ISIS had sent 400 fighters across greater Europe. Is that still a story?
Unless they're all rounded up, it's probably still a story.
Is there validity to it? Is there any way to say it was more than an ISIS tweet or some sort of PR play? What do we know? Anything?
Nothing firm that I've heard. But I think there's always been a working assumption that ISIS was taking in people into Syria and Iraq, training them, and sending them back out into Europe, the States, wherever, in order to carry out attacks. That's been kind of the working assumption for officials for a long time. And as we've seen here in Brussels, you can't always stop them.
Is there tension in the streets as you walk around? Do you feel fairly safe doing your job?
No, fairly safe. And I think there's actually sometimes a celebratory feeling, at least in Place de la Bourse, which has become kind of this main gathering spot for tea candles and the familiar tokens of grief after these attacks. And people just kind of spontaneously cheering and singing and expressing solidarity and love of country. And those are important,
sure,
good signs. But I think there still is a worry. I mean, there's armed guards on the streets and soldiers deployed at certain subway stations, and still not a feeling of wholeness here after the attacks.
Aaron Kotursky, ABC News. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. It is 6:57 after 7 o'clock. Rick Pearson, Pat Brady. You guys can phone or text anytime at 312-981-7200. Pat Brady and I were talking, if there's going to be a third party, I mean, there's kind of talk about that off and on all the time. Mm-hmm. We need a name for it. A name for the third party. So I think we make that the text question for at least an hour. So if there's going to be a third great American political party, maybe you take the best of both parties, or maybe you take the idea that the Republican Party was once, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a decade called the 2000s. But there was once an idea that the Republican Party was the party of ideas, party of hope. Maybe take the best of the Democrats as well. And listen, put it all in a Richard Simmons salad shooter. What do you come up with for a name? What's the name of the next great party, the third party? Text at 312-981-7200. And if you don't have one, make it up.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
7:10, Rick Pearson, better writer than you and me, put together. Best political writer in America, host of the Sunday Spin. 7 a.m. Sunday mornings, you see him on Channel 9 and CLTV. But most important, you read him and you hear him here. @Rep30 on social media, REP30. Good morning, Mr. Pearson.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. You have a show lined up for your Sunday?
Actually, I am taking this Sunday off, and my good friend Amanda Vinicky from WUIS-FM in Springfield is going to be taking over the show, and she does a fine job, and no one's going to miss anything, trust me.
And has she done this before?
Yes, she has.
I am not aware of it. Not aware of it. All right, so she's your go-to. She's your bench, the bullpen.
Yes, she is.
Okay.
She is the great reliever, I want to tell you.
And you want to recommend people listen on Sunday?
Absolutely.
All right. Today, the Illinois Supreme Court should be announcing whether or not they buy into Mayor Rahm Emanuel's pension save. What's going to happen there?
Well, the odds are not good here, and this goes back to the case that the Supreme Court ruled on involving the state pension issue and the constitutional protections that exist for public employee pensions. And even Mayor Emanuel's administration privately is not optimistic that the changes that they're talking about, that actually, even though they've been somewhat agreed to by the unions, they're not optimistic that that's going to go forward.
And this goes to the basic tenet of that line or two that you can't adjust the pension at all?
You can adjust the pension, but you can only adjust it up, is basically what the Supreme Court has ruled. They said you cannot impair or diminish pensions by law. So once you start employment in government, city or state, those conditions of the pension cannot be changed. It's a contractual guarantee.
So if we accept the truth, the fact of the matter, that the pension crisis is financially choking the state, and yet the pension can't be legally changed, and court challenges have proved that it can't be legally changed, is there anything short of a constitutional convention to fix this?
Well, but even if you had a constitutional convention, you couldn't change it for current retirees, because of a federal contract clause.
But if there was something written that said that current retirees, you know, up to a point this year, 5 years from now, whatever, and everybody previously, they're all okay, going forward we're going to change it, would that language be enough to pass muster in court?
Sure. Going forward, in effect, on the state level, we've already changed pensions for state employees for going forward for new hires, but not existing hires. You can't change the rules in the game for people once they've been hired. That's basically what the court has said.
So you guys have run the math on this several different times and in different ways. If you change it on new hires but continue to pay those that are already in the system or about to retire for a reasonable period of time, this year, next year, the next 5 years, what does that do for state monies?
Well, it's, you know, we're still looking at, as far as the state level, we're looking at 20 to 25% of your tax dollars, 20 cents or a quarter, is going to pay public pensions. And that's going to last for probably at least a decade. We are near the top of the ramp, if not at the top of the ramp, for how much the state is obligated to pay contractually for pensions. And it basically comes down to a matter of attrition. And for retirees to kind of fall off that schedule. And, it's a very, very painful period. And that's what makes all these efforts to try to change pensions and the effects of how much those costs are and the money that it conceivably takes away from other programs, especially on the state level and social programs, on the city level, the same kind of thing. That's what makes it so difficult, is because of that basically ironclad guarantee. The state, when it argued its case, said that this was a financial emergency, and the courts slapped it away very quickly.
Well, if the cure for the cancer is increased taxes, which is worse, the cancer, the pension, or the cure?
Well, you can't do anything about the pensions. And the fact of the matter is, even with Governor Rauner has even acknowledged about talking about the need for new revenue, albeit as a condition for getting his turnaround agenda. But nevertheless, the state can't exist on its current revenue base. You saw the city this week borrow $220 million in anticipation of having to make a pension payment. We are in a real, real hole right now. And yes, it's partly because of the promises that were made that so long ago, but those promises are promises that have to be kept. In the old days, you know, you had public employees that were basically, and I'm talking largely at the state level, which I'm more familiar with, you had public employees that, for the most part, took jobs that they could get paid more in the private sector, and that it was kind of the guarantee of a good pension at the end of the run that made up for perhaps not making as much on an annual basis. But when he started throwing things in like a 3% annual cost of living increase that just boosted pensions beyond what many workers earned during their time of work for government, that's where things got out of hand. And you know, that was back done in relatively boom days in the 80s, and now we're paying the consequences of that.
All right, so just again, we'll wrap this up and then come back and talk about the many other things to hit you with before we let you go. But just to wrap this up so people can wrap their heads around it, when you say there's no way to fix the pension problem, that's based on court decisions that have already been made and precedents that have been set, but those who have the rules make the rules. Is there no way to go back and rewrite the rule that says we can't make these adjustments?
Basically, under federal contract law and based on what the Illinois Supreme Court has already ruled, the day you start employment with government and the conditions for your pension that exist at that time, they exist with you until you leave government employment. So, yeah, it's about paying the piper is really what it comes down to based on what the court has said.
And that's why this idea of new hires that went into place needs to be enforced immediately and going forward, because
right. and those
to save it wherever you can
made.
Save it.
Right. Those changes have been made, but you know, you're looking at a generational change before it affects the numbers, really.
How come other states don't have it as bad as we do?
Because we're one of, I believe, two states that have that kind of constitutional guarantee when it comes to pensions. And I'll say when the Constitution was written back in 1970, our pensions were funded basically at the same low level that they were then. And so despite the fact of that, you know, constitutional provision, nobody's really ever made the effort to put money into the pension system until the last couple of years.
That's why it's not a Republican or a Democrat problem. It's a politician problem.
No, I mean, you look at the Chicago public schools and how they were granted. They had one of the teachers had one of the best funded public pension systems in the United States. And then when the 1995 Mayor Daley gains control of the schools, there was also provisions that allowed pension holidays so that property tax money that would normally go to pensions went into the general public schools. And now that pension system is not on the verge of collapse, but it's certainly significantly as weak as the rest of the pension systems in the state.
Can't kick the can down the road anymore. We can't afford the can. More with Rick Pearson in a second. Back with our friend Rick Pearson, Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com, and the Sunday Spin off this Sunday, but he wants you to give it a listen. The fill-in host again is who, Rick?
Amanda Vinicky. She's a longtime State House reporter for the public radio station in Springfield, WUIS, and she does a great job.
Rick is at Rap30 on social media. Andre is back from vacation. She'd like to know what, Andre?
Good morning, Rick. I want to know, CTU delegates are going to walk out April 1st, this teacher walkout. What is that going to accomplish, other than just disrupting everything for the day?
Well, this is going to be very interesting because, you know, when we had the strike last time, it didn't necessarily affect parents. And this time around, this is the leverage point where it is trying to disrupt the lives of Chicago public school parents. And so this is a leverage point to see, you know, what kind of concessions that Mayor Emanuel may try to make to prevent this. This is still very much a a fast-moving game despite the overwhelming vote.
But to just go a little deeper on Andrea's question, the leverage accomplishes what? Because to me, Rahm and the city know what they're going to be dealing with here.
Yeah, and you know, you already had the fact that there was, quote, a deal, and that deal was rejected. And, I mean, whatever you may think of Karen Lewis and Jesse Sharkey and the others, they understand what the fiscal ramifications are of what the Chicago Public Schools are looking at. I mean, and of course, this is inextricably tied to the budget impasse in Springfield and what public school funding is going to be. And despite the hopes of everybody that somehow Springfield's magically going to produce a couple hundred million dollars for some kind of bailout, if we're still in this state situation right now, 10 months without a budget, the only state in the country, Pennsylvania just resolved its budget yesterday. To try and hope on Springfield for anything, I think, is a misguided mistake. But the question is when the teachers walked out last time, they had a great deal of public support. I'm not so sure necessarily that public support exists in the same numbers, even though our polling has showed most people side with the union over Rahm when it comes to who does better with the public schools. That having been said, when you start actually, you know, disrupting people's livelihood, that's a whole other issue. And that's an interesting calculation that I don't think anybody really can measure until something like that happens.
I think that's what bothered me too, Rick, is that when Karen Lewis made that comment earlier this week, when people were worried about the teachers, worried about the consequences of not showing up for work, and Karen Lewis said, well, what are they going to do, put us all in jail? They don't have 27,000 spots in the Cook County Jail right now. That lackadaisical retort just kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, and there's another factor at play too, is that you have a political game within the Chicago Teachers Union over the leadership is up for another vote, and so I think if anything, that does not help negotiations of any kind when you have union leaders trying to play the strongest hand they can to achieve political support within their own union.
The teachers deserve to be paid fairly. The kids deserve to have an education they can count on without interruption. The city has to operate within a financial structure. When are the grown-ups showing up?
Well, you can ask that on any level with all of the hurdles that we face and budgetary issues, the schools, the city, the state. Here again, Steve, it's almost like wishful thinking of, you know, when do the parents actually show up and say, okay, enough of this stuff, let's get down to business.
Probably will take a parent revolt for this.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I think it'll be very interesting to see what the responses of parents who so far overwhelmingly side with the teachers' union on this.
Parents already in Chicago schools are being asked to do way more than they ought to be asked to do to fund the schools their kids go to. Before we let you go, the Tribune is suing the city for the Gary McCarthy emails. Do you know the status of this? I know it's not your story in particular.
It's just a filing that existed. I mean, this kind of comes on the heels of a number of suits that we've been filing to try and get access to public records, a suit that we filed against Mayor Emanuel over his use of text messages, a suit we filed with the foundation over at College of DuPage on, you know, what they spent. And, you know, everybody talks this great game of transparency. Everybody from President Obama and Governor Rauner on down, that I'm the most transparent leader that you have. And yet games still are being played at all kinds of levels on trying to hide public information. We're the taxpayers. We want accountability. That's all we're asking.
So, freedom of information move.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Enjoy your weekend, whatever you're doing.
Appreciate it.
All right. There you go. Rick Pearson at Rep 30. Pat Brady's here. Pat, we'll do more in a second, but I just want to give you a couple of the names that have come in for the third party idea. These are potential third parties. The Libationists. So,
hey, I did some research after we spoke.
Yeah.
and all the different parties, the My Rent's Too High party, all the different parties in Historically Alive and Dead, the overwhelming favorite was the beer party.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's probably 30 beer parties.
Okay, so do you like the Libationist? Should we keep that as a finalist?
I'd keep it in the top eight, yeah.
Okay. How about the Bazinga party?
That's seven. I'd give that a seven.
Okay. The Rational party, the You Win by Default party, the American party. By the way, that knucklehead Ted Cruz, in defending his wife against Trump, picked a line from Michael Douglas in The American President and pulled the quote to use it.
You mean the American President wasn't real?
Well, but you know,
neither was Dave.
Dave wasn't real either.
In 25, 30 years ago, it got Joe Biden kicked out of the presidential race for lifting a line from a British, whatever. The Common Sense Party.
No, please, can't be, no.
The People's Party, that's a little too commie.
Yeah, that's total commie.
Yeah. The Tory Party, this way if we have to go back to Great Britain, we'll already have a leg up. The God Please Save Us Party, the Anyone Except Those Already Running Party. I like this, the Third Party, or the Third Eye Blind Party.
Oh, I like that.
You can actually have Third Eye Blind play. Cochran and Company, sounds like a talk show, but it could be a party. What if we call the Third Party the Third Party? That would actually work too, wouldn't
yeah.
it? Let's make that a finalist. And the No Dummies Party.
Well, we are talking yeah, those are good. Those
Why
are
introduce
good.
Logic?
Texters, 312-981-7200. For starting a third party, we need a name. What's your idea?
Are you sure he's a Mormon? Are we sure?
I'm not out here to stop Donald Trump, but I can tell you the reality of it, because I don't believe that Senator Cruz can come to the East and win.
Donald Trump doesn't scare Heidi remotely. When he bellows and attacks her, she's used to dealing with people who are full of hot air and tossing attacks, so it doesn't bother her in the slightest.
I have, as of now, gotten more votes than anybody else, including Donald Trump.
They love me. They love me.
7:42. Pat Brady's here. Pat, what's the name of your company?
Next Generation Strategies.
How's business?
Business is great. Thank you.
Yeah. And follow you on social media at Pat_Brady.
Yes.
Okay. Ted Cruz just said Heidi's used to hot air. Does that mean
that was my thought exactly.
Is that at the house or
yeah,
what?
Yeah. That was exactly what
gets
I was
gets blown
thinking.
Off by the daughter, hot air from the wife.
Here's Ted Cruz defending his wife against Donald Trump. The American President clip is first?
Correct.
Oh, yes. Well, that's unfortunate because it really doesn't work for me narratively. Here's the American President with Michael Douglas.
You want a character to debate, Bob? You better stick with me because Sidney Ellen Wade is way out of your league.
And for Donald, she is way out of his league. If he wants to get in a character fight, he should stick with me.
It's just unbelievable, dude. It's your wife. You really need a Michael Douglas movie to defend your wife?
It's nice when the world is blowing up that we're having this discussion at the highest levels.
It really is incredible. New Quinnipiac poll out this morning. Quinnipiac University is a small school in Connecticut that has a pretty terrific polling operation. And a new poll says that two out of three Americans want the Republicans to consider the Supreme Court nominee. Well, why pay attention to that? Why not just continue to burn the party down?
You've been right all along, and so has Senator Kirk. People want him to do their job.
It really is amazing that, because I don't understand the end game here. Because if you take it just at the basics, let's say the presidential race is a 50-50. It's a coin flip. It's not, but let's say it is. So let's say it's a 50-50, but Hillary Clinton gets elected. So what happens then? If the Republicans maintain control of the Senate, will we wait 4 more years?
Yeah,
we just going to run it 4-on-4?
It makes, makes no sense.
Hillary, not now.
If I hear
no
Mitch, if I hear Mitch McConnell, they'll say one more time, let the people decide.
The people did decide.
The people decided in 08 and 12.
We've said it time and time again. If you want to kill a nomination, there are about 5 billion ways to do it.
Right.
Let the process go through and vote against him.
Right. But give the man his fair hearing.
Right.
It's just ridiculous. The president just gets back from Cuba. You know, if optics matter in your final year, not exactly running this week very well. President Obama, regardless of the fact that the president's job can be done anywhere at any time for any reason, when Brussels, an ally, is under attack, and Belgium is a government that we need to be strong. The president doesn't need to be at a baseball game in Cuba or dancing the tango in Argentina. He needs to be at the White House. I get that you could do the job from anywhere, but he needs to come home.
Yeah, the optics of him at the baseball game doing the interview on ESPN talking about global affairs, I think, were bad. But he's been mailing it in the last couple months, and for years we've been saying that the United States needs to show some strong leadership. I mean, the old guys like James Baker, the real guys that really know what they're talking about, said we should have had a meeting over there years ago to talk about a strategy to beat ISIS, but didn't seem interested in doing it.
We'll come back and talk about that, talk more about the race, several questions for Mr. Brady. We continue to take your calls as well, or I should say your texts as well, renaming whatever third parties have existed in the past. We don't care. We want a new name for a third party in this country before we actually launch it. And so far, the leaders in the clubhouse aren't bad. The libationists, huh? Is that number one right now?
That's number one for me.
Dave's voting heavy on libationists.
I'm going for libation.
/7:51, Steve Cochran, Pat Brady's here. Always good to have Pat here. Oh, Eric Edelstein is off this week. He's on assignment. Election's over. Where's he? Is he on vacation?
I think he's celebrating. He had a pretty good night. I think he's celebrating.
All his candidates won?
All his candidates won. Okay. That's the best night he's ever had.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, good for him. What is Paul Ryan's role in all of this?
Well, he's the master of ceremonies. He runs the convention. And he's, I think, probably the leader of the party right now. But I think he's played it right. He can't say too much. But he's scolded the Donald when he's gotten way out of line. But you got
to
let.
Doesn't he have to take a little firmer stand on some of this stuff, though?
You can't really, because it's there's rules and there's a process, and you have to go through it, or you just completely alienate the base of the party. So I think he's been very smart in how he's handled it, but he's been fairly assertive in some of the idiotic stuff we've seen in the last couple of months. But he's going to be running the convention.
Is he like the oldest brother in the family when mom and dad are fighting, and you want to make sure everybody stays together?
Yeah, and
so he's trying to save the family.
He's trying to save the family, and I think there's a real threat that if somehow Trump does pull this off, that the party will disappear, because four and ten aren't going to show up.
George Wallace's former campaign advisor, campaign manager, and his wife, who were both there in 1968, came out yesterday and said, and by the way, these are two people who are political operatives, and they worked on the Wallace campaign. They matured through the 70s, grew up themselves, but have done a lot of work for racial equality. Imagine anybody that worked for George Wallace working towards racial equality.
He made a statement, too, at one point.
You could either take them lightly or you could take them seriously. The point of the story is George Wallace's campaign director and his wife are saying, oh, no, don't insult George Wallace by bringing Trump into this. Don't compare Trump to George Wallace. At least George Wallace knew who he was. George Wallace's message was consistent. He never wavered from it. He didn't advocate violence. He actually shut down violence when it occurred in several areas. You didn't have to like him. Yes, he was a racist, but he's no. I mean, literally, their message is, oh, no, he's no Donald Trump. Trump's worse.
Trump is at 24% right now in approval rating, and the Republican Party brand is a couple points above leprosy. I mean, it's
it really is
it's
bad.
Really bad. And it's gone down substantially since his nonsense here in the last 7 or 8 months.
Would you explain to folks why the sucking sound, as Ross Perot would have put it, of Donald Trump's campaign is dangerous to control of the House and the Senate?
We could lose. The Senate is in play. If he's at the top of the ticket, we'll lose the United States Senate. If he's at the top of the ticket, there's a good chance the House, which we have the largest majority since the 1920s, is in play. Here in Illinois, it'll put a lot of the state House seats in play. It'll certainly hurt Mark Kirk and Bob Dole. So if he's at the top of the ticket, and you had to put the background of that, we picked up 900 legislative seats in the state houses in the last 7 years of Republicans, 12 governorships, the House and Senate. All that goes down the drain if Trump's a nominee. I'm not saying that because I think he's an idiot. I'm just saying that's the political reality. He polls so terribly with every group outside the 35% that support him.
But let's talk about the fact that he's an idiot, because because there is a danger to not understanding policy. I really am growing really tired of hearing people go, well, he's putting a team together and he'll listen to the people on his team. One of the great strengths of being president of the United States, and frankly, this has been a weakness of President Obama. It's been a weakness of many presidents. You can't get the job and then figure out who's going to tell you what to do. You have to have a sense of what you want to do to have that job. You can't know everything about every department. You can't know everything about every issue. That's what advisors are for. But when you make that decision, you need to have a basis of knowledge and need to have done your prep and your homework so you can actually do the job you were elected to do, not say something that somebody told you to say because that's the guy that is your guy on that topic. And that's the great danger, I think, of Trump. He doesn't know any of the policy stuff.
Read the transcript of the Washington Post editorial board interview that took place this week, and it will scare you to death about putting this guy as commander-in-chief of the United States. And to your point, they try to compare Trump to Reagan. Reagan spent 40 years going around the country talking about conservatism, his beliefs, anti-communist, and 2 terms as governor of the state of California before he was in a position to make big decisions. We got this guy that was doing reality shows with Rod Blagojevich 4 or 5 years ago.
I forgot about that.
Okay,
Blagojevich was part of that, too.
Dennis Rodman.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate for 1 second. The Trump supporters that I've talked to and interviewed have said, hey, you know, he's running away with all of these different states. The people are speaking. He is getting the overwhelming support from a lot of people, despite what many of us think.
Well, that's not factual because there's, 20 million votes cast. He's got 7 million votes. He's winning the Republican primaries with 35% of the Republican primary vote, which represents, 8 or 9% of actually who will vote in total in the fall. So right now he's winning the Republican primary because of the 35% he's getting a split with the other two. But the reality is he's not going to have the delegates, I don't think, at the convention to win, so it's going to be an open convention. And now we hear the Donald whining about the rules, that if he gets close, he thinks he should get it. That 65% of the party doesn't support him.
Yeah, and again, I use this analogy, but if the Indy 500 were 498 miles, a lot of people would have won. You know, you got to get to the number. You got to actually get to the number to win. That's the rule.
Yeah, and he's big on rules and fairness unless it doesn't work out for him.
One of the more frightening knuckleheads in the world is Kim Jong-un from North Korea, who this week said something about a preemptive nuclear strike. Wouldn't it be scary if a presidential candidate used that kind of language? Yesterday, Donald Trump said we should nuke ISIS. You can't give the nuclear codes to a guy who thinks you could drop a nuke on Iraq and that's going to solve anything.
And the scary thing is, I don't think he understands the role of the United States. We are the leader in the world.
It's not a Stallone movie.
People look to us.
People die.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely outrageous. Ted Cruz, on the other hand, is the stable one who wants to go into hardworking neighborhoods filled with Muslims and just start watching them, have police just take laps around the block and watch them. There's your 1 and 2. I never thought I'd get to a point in my life where the Republican Party looked like an absolute insane asylum, because I don't know how else to describe it.
Let's not lose all hope. There's another candidate, and I do support him. I'm a delegate for him, who yesterday there was a poll that Hillary Clinton's a good poll, that Hillary Clinton beats Trump by 20 points and pretty much the same beats Cruz by 20 points. John Kasich beats Hillary by 11 points. And if this gets to an open convention, you might see John Kasich as a nominee.
And by the way, that's why Kasich's staying in the race.
Yes.
So everything you see about being mathematically eliminated and get out of the way so Ted Cruz can keep Donald Trump from winning. Look, Kasich's staying in the race because Cruz and Trump should not be winning, in his opinion, in my opinion. I support Kasich as well. So for anyone who would like to see a fair-minded operative in the White House who could actually work with both parties and do something, Kasich would be that guy, and that's why he's staying in the race.
And he has that 18 years of experience on the Armed Services Committee and has actually run a state for 2 terms very, very successfully. He's got a 70% approval rating. But if this all blows up and Trump gets it, who are we going to nominate for our third party?
They love me. They love me.
Steve, the libation party.
I don't know who the third party nominee should be at this point. I know a lot of who shouldn't be there, but I know who. I'm still searching for just the right people. I don't think it's Kasich, because Kasich I don't think would accept it. I think Kasich wants to be the Republican. But I think we could have that. I think that might be the next text poll. Let's get a name for the party before we actually name the candidates. Is that upside down? How do people keep in touch with you on social media?
That's Twitter, right?
Whatever.
Just kidding. Pat underscore Brady.
Yeah, we could give out your cell number. It'd be quicker.
That's been done before.
Yes, it has. And in addition to that, your company's name is?
Next Generation Strategies.
How was your election night?
Long.
Not as good as Adelstein?
Not as good as Adelstein. He was all happy last week. I wasn't so happy.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
It is 8:12 in the morning, and Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9 on a gray, rainy morning in downtown Chicago. How are things at Channel 9? Interesting. And are they always that way? Because today seems more quiet. Dean's not ready.
I don't know where he's at.
People need to understand that we don't have a monitor set up, so I can't visually see. Oh, I hear a microphone. Dean, are you with me?
Oh, not yet.
Putting on his headphones.
And his bunny suit.
Dean, over. Dean, over.
Are you waiting for me?
No. You were there the whole time, as far as I know. I'm just explaining to people, we don't have a monitor set up in the newsroom to see if you're sitting in the chair or not.
Yeah.
So you were probably called away to an important story.
No. I was distracted by a story.
By something shiny?
That I was checking on. Yeah, somebody shook their keys in front of me, and I got distracted. Keys.
Look at the keys. Well, if you're like me and you paid up your SAG membership, you were saddened to hear that Ken Howard, the White Shadow and the president of the Screen Actors Guild, died yesterday.
Yeah, it is a sad story. I'm a pretty young man, 71 years old.
Nice guy. You ever meet him?
I've met him several times.
Big fella.
Very big fella, very nice man. And a real advocate for, you know, the Screen Actors Guild is the actors' union, basically. The Screen Actors Guild and the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, they're all mm-hmm. combined now. So they represent people who are in on television and the movies. Many of us here at WGN are members of that. He was a real advocate for fair wages, fair working conditions. Really good guy, passed away yesterday.
Actor, too, and a guy that could play funny. For those of you who watch 30 Rock with any regularity, he played the owner of the network for a couple of seasons and was great with Alec Baldwin in those scenes.
Yeah, really great in so many fairly contemporary shows. But probably people remember him best as Coach Ken Reeves from TV's White Shadow. He played Thomas Jefferson in the stage musical 1776. George Clooney told a great story about him yesterday when they first met in 1983. Clooney was running late for an audition, had no way of getting to his audition, and Ken Howard wound up driving him all across L.A., which is formidable, to help him get to his audition. They became very good friends. They worked on the movie Michael Clayton together, so we're
love that movie.
Very, very sorry to hear about the death of Ken Howard yesterday.
As was, one of the classic. Well, I don't know how to describe A Tribe Called Quest. There's a lot of people don't even know A Tribe Called Quest, but a very innovative, very influential group.
Yeah, classic is the perfect description for this group that pretty much was active during the entire 1990s. They kind of got involved in independent projects and broke up for a little while, got back together again a little while in the 2000s. But their time to shine was in the 1990s, in which they made a powerful influence on hip-hop, weaving hip-hop with jazz and R&B, and really, you know, taking it beyond, you know, the Rapper's Delight kind of brand of hip-hop, which was, you know, kind of the introduction to the mainstream, at least, anyway. But people like Kendrick Lamar remembering him and saying what an influence he was on him, and Snoop Dogg, and Justin Timberlake, and Pharrell Williams. I mean, the list went on and on and on and on yesterday of people remembering and talking about Fife, as he was called. Malik Isaac Taylor is his real name. Had a history of health problems. In 2008, had a kidney transplant to deal with his longtime battle with diabetes. yesterday as the other tribe mates thanked their fans for all the love and support, said that their hearts are heavy, but he was full of joy and full of happiness, and had everything he needed in his life. He was considered really one of the most influential. I know a lot of people aren't into hip-hop music, but you would be surprised. When I was listening to Tribe Called Quest songs yesterday, I was surprised at the number of songs that I knew.
Sure.
I just didn't know it was them.
Well, but that's how you met me, through hip-hop, because, you know, it's the music of my people.
That's very true.
Jared Payton knew Fife, and Shaw Davis, who works for us, talked to him as recently as Friday, and their families are friends, right? Wasn't that the deal?
Yeah, Sean Davis was really good friends with him, and I just saw him in the hallway yesterday and brought it up to him, and he said he just talked to him on the phone last Friday, just a friendly phone call. And Jared and Sean have a podcast together, and they remember him in a podcast they posted yesterday at WGNRadio.com if you want to hear more.
Yeah, we last talked to him. It was a documentary that came out in 2011 on the band and the breakup of the band, and we talked with Fife then. And we've got that posted up on the WGNTV.com. Really, really interesting person. Very, very interesting, very thoughtful, very nice person. So we're sorry to hear about that. Speaking of our love of hip-hop, you and I, the music of our people.
Uh-huh. Sure.
It was a story about hip-hop that distracted me at the beginning of the segment.
What was the story?
Because I was reading it. There's a member of the Wu-Tang clan.
Wu or Tang?
Neither Wu nor Tang. Mm-hmm. There was a story that was reported by TMZ that a member of the band, Marquise Johnson, had cut off a very sensitive part of his body and then jumped off the balcony of his apartment. The story turned out not to be true.
Right.
But the headline caught my attention. TMZ sued for falsely reporting Wu-Tang affiliate cut off his, you know...
And take a look at your junk.
So I saw this headline.
Well, yeah, when you see that, you've got, as a journalist, you've got to look into that.
I thought if there is a story about a Johnsonectomy, I need to report this to
you. I believe that's the medical term.
Yeah.
It's a Johnsonectomy.
So
I'm glad you were distracted.
That's what I was distracted with. I apologize.
If you're listening in Georgia this morning, Disney's about to ban you. If you're Kurt Cobain's daughter, you're trying to protect your money. And if you're SCTV's Andrea Martin, you've got yourself a little big fat Greek wedding coming up. So
I also have a breaking story that just came over a couple of minutes ago. About,
is it about a Johnson?
What? It's not about a Johnson. It's about a Luke, one of the biggest names in country music, who is coming to Chicago. And we've got the announcement for country music fans.
No. Kevin, Dean can't hear me. Be ready to dump him. Every time he talks about the Shake Lake Shake, whatever the hell that thing's called.
No, it's not.
He's going to start cursing again. Just cover it up as much as you can.
No, it's just when he says Chicago.
Oh, he's a total profanity freak when it comes to this show.
Steve, I just did a story about someone cutting off their junk. You want to? Is the kid? Could
it
be
that
much worse than
me.
That?
It's really? When you talk about the lake shake is when things go dark.
You are so full of what?
Stand by more with Dean in a moment. Tribe Called Quest. A little Lou Reed mix.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
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 Well, I'm gone. Can I kick it?
They sampled...
Hey, Steve,
better than anybody.
Can I kick it?
You can. You know what they use that for? That was a theme in Springfield all through the 90s. Can I kick it? Kick the can. Can I kick it? It's Dean Richards live from Channel 9.
Other music news?
Yeah.
This is so fresh. The ink is still wet on the announcer that just came out. You are literally the first to hear this.
Oh, no. It's big.
That Luke Bryan is coming to Wrigley Field. This is huge for country music.
To see a Cubs game? Or?
To take over the ballpark and do a musical concert.
Oh, he's doing a show.
Yeah. Saturday, August 27th. Tickets are going to go on sale April the 1st, 10 a.m. at cubs.com/LukeBryan, B-R-Y-A-N, or livenation.com.
He's good.
It's going to be Luke Bryan. It's going to be Little Big Town, Dustin Lynch, and DJ Rock. That's going to be an amazing show. All at the Friendly Confines again, August 27th. Tickets go on sale April 1st at 10.
Hey, is that, speaking of country music, is that Blake Shelton, Gwen Stefani sham thing still going on?
Still going on. Still going on. Apparently, they're very much in love, Steve. Don't deny these young kids their love.
He's never going to be able to get the hate off him. You know, whenever they break up, you know, what was a Meryl Streep, Silkwood? Is that the character she played where she had to take the nuclear
need
shower?
Need to take a shower like that?
But yeah. Scrub everything off.
Trying to get the Gwen Stefani off you?
Well, he's got the Gwen Stefani on him now, right?
Yeah. Well, you know how I feel about Gwen Stefani. I'm a big fan.
I know. She's your favorite.
Sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. The 8 o'clock hour continues with Dean Richards, who is sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center. What's going on with Kurt Cobain's daughter?
She is getting divorced. Frances.
I didn't even know she was married.
She's been married a short time.
How old is she?
She is 25 years old.
Okay.
25. And has been married to this guy named Isaiah Silva for a couple of years. So they filed for divorce. Her bigger concern right now is that she has a $450 million inheritance left.
How did Kurt Cobain have that much money?
He was the front man for Nirvana. Are you kidding?
Yeah, but they had like three hits.
Yeah, but they paved the way for the grunge movement.
But did they own all of grunge?
They were pretty big.
Did he have a license on flannel?
On hipster hats?
That's a lot of money for Kurt Cobain. That surprises me that he had that net worth.
I think probably it continue. You know, it's royalties that continue. It's merchandising that continues. You know, all those kinds of things are probably all part of the estate that she is entitled to and does not want to share with her soon-to-be ex-husband. She says in the court documents, says he's not entitled to any of the money
from
the estate at all.
Man up. So. It's not your money. Man up. Move on.
Exactly.
Disney threatening a boycott of all of the state of Georgia.
This is getting to be a pretty huge big deal. The Georgia state legislatures have passed a bill that would allow faith-based organizations to refuse services to anyone that they find, quote, objectionable.
This is the Indiana Pizza Parlor thing.
This is...
Remember when the Indiana Pizza Parlor didn't want to make the gay wedding cake?
Same kind of
gay
deal.
Wedding pizza, I guess it was.
This is a bill which is designed for people to refuse services to same-sex marriages and other same-sex services and products. So these two bills are this bill sailed through the Georgia legislative branch. It's now sitting on the Republican governor's desk there. Last week, the NFL said if this is passed, they would never hold a Super Bowl in Georgia. Other companies have come forward and said that they would not do business with the state of Georgia if this is passed. Yesterday, Disney, who has they filmed part of the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie in Atlanta, part of the new Captain America movie in Atlanta, and they have three other projects which are set to shoot in Atlanta because they do have lucrative tax credits there. But Disney said that if legislation is passed,
they're out.
That encourages any kind of discriminatory practices. They don't want any part of doing business in
a
place like that. Interestingly, just a few minutes ago, it was released that Turner Broadcasting, which is based in Atlanta, said that they would have a problem with it as well, and they would have to rethink being in a place where discriminatory practices are legal if that takes place. So there's a lot for the governor of Georgia to think about.
A lot of pressure in the NFL with the Super Bowl. No Super Bowl going to Atlanta under those circumstances as well. So there's a lot of economic pressure.
Yeah. And Disney Company, I give them a lot of credits to coming up and it would be easy.
Way to go, Mickey!
Easy to stand back. You know, we've you know, you wonder how when push comes to shove, they could save a lot of money by shooting in Georgia, but they're putting their principles ahead of
good for them.
Possible money savings on this.
I want to save the big fat Greek wedding discussion until tomorrow when you can actually review it. You'll review Batman Robin tomorrow, or Batman and
whoever
and Superman.
Whoever
tomorrow?
That other mask guy is with Superman, I'll tell you about both of those tomorrow.
We're coming up with a new name for the third party we're starting because of the political situation in this country. The John DeCoste party is doing quite well in the voting.
Naturally.
The birthday party. How about the comb-over party? The comb-over party, that seems to be something Trump would front.
That's very popular.
Puck in my pants party.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Here's an easy one. The third party name, for the love of God, no more Clintons, Bushes, or Trumps. Party. The only stipulation is you cannot be part of the Clinton family, Bush family, or anyone that looks like or is related to Donald Trump. The acronym would be the FTLOGNMCBOT party, or as I like to call it, the FTLOGNMCBOT party.
That makes as much sense as anything else going on.
How about the Canada Here We Come party? That's another one. That's all in here. So if you have one, text us, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
That was the voice of John Williams. He's one of the, you know, I mean, John, you know, we've all known John for 20-plus years. Does a great job on the weekend with us. Great job every afternoon on WCCO in Minneapolis, which, by the way, I listen to John a lot. You could hear John on, you know, TuneIn and other places, any app you want. CCO, legendary radio station. But also, you know, he developed this VibeScore app, which is tremendous. You know what that's like? It's like Tinder for news.
It is,
that's
yeah.
That's a hot news
yeah.
story. It's hot, it's not hot.
It's a good way to put it. Yeah. Swipe right, swipe
yellow.
Left.
And also can give us a little bit of the Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul take on this kid, Matt Olson, and the combined efforts of the Blackhawks and the Wild. Good morning to you, Mr. Williams.
Boy, you guys crack me up. My app is like Tinder for news. I want to be Tinder for Tinder, Steve. I don't
it
want to
be
Tinder
bad.
For news.
Did you see that Tinder wants to get into the political business where you could take
yeah.
a candidate and swipe right or swipe left?
That's a pretty good idea.
It's not bad, really, really.
I think that's actually, when you consider what Trump and Cruz are arguing about, I think we're already there. We might as well just dive in.
Speaking of Trump and Cruz, it makes me think of Rubio and the fact that the good people of Minnesota have a bunch of Rubio delegates they'd like to give away. What's the status of that?
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's kind of complicated because I don't know if you've been following this, but the Republican Party is sort of making up the rules as they go.
Right.
Or they might at the convention. So I think in the first round, the Rubio delegates are committed to actually voting for Rubio, though he's technically not running. It's in the ensuing round? How clear are you on this, Steve?
Well, my
it's
thought
in the ensuing round that they're at play.
Yeah, my thought was they were free agents right away, but then in a little research, I think you're right about that. I think they're locked in for one vote.
Right.
And then if nobody gets to 1237, then it's off to the races.
And I saw somewhere that Trump would need 90% of the free agents if it's a brokered convention in that first round to lock it up. In the second round, that's where you get to the sort of carnival that everybody wants to see happen. I mean, if for no other reason, entertainment purposes. But that's where it would really get interesting because then about 75% of the delegates are free. And then they could vote for you or me or Andre or anybody they wanted.
Now, Minnesota is a largely Democratic state, and I assume Hillary is doing well.
Yeah, she is, although, you know, it's a college town, too. The Twin Cities
yeah.
are, so there's a big Bernie Sanders faction here. But you're right, it's you know, it's the only state, right, that has not voted for Trump or
right.
Cruz.
Right.
So we went with Rubio there. Interestingly, the point guard for the Minnesota Timberwolves is Ricky Rubio, and I'm not sure if some people weren't confused.
That's funny.
When they went in. He's from Spain,
yeah.
So I don't know if he could be president, but he speaks Spanish, and that seems to help.
And the ladies love him, so I assume it's fine. Hey, how are things at VibeScore? Are you guys continuing to grow?
Yeah, we are. Not as fast as I want us to. I'm still trying to figure out how to get the corporate buy-in. So attention, major corporations.
Yeah,
if you'd
sign
like
up
us
today.
To give you an app that will actually enable you to engage people's perceptions of your products or services and score it, we can do that. But we sure have fun rating things like Megyn Kelly's hair and, you know, how do you feel about candidates? How do you feel about TV shows? Things like that.
Megyn Kelly's hair, how did she do?
She was very high. She got a real good vibe score.
She
you know, the
hair.
Last debate, she's rocking
she's
that
beautiful.
Thing, man.
She could be bald.
Yeah. Well, she's, yeah, so it can be trivial, but it can also be, you know, consequential stuff that we talk about on VibeScore, which is a free app. VibeScore is one word.
And Android or your Apple Store, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so both of those. All right, so the Blackhawks in the Wild did a really cool thing the other day for a young man who's in the fight of his life, and he's a Minnesota kid, named Matt Olson.
From Isanti.
Yeah, and where is Isanti?
Upstate. You know, I don't ask me to get out my map, but, you know, Minnesota's small towns from the Canadian border all the way down have generated some of these amazing hockey players, and this is just another story that's reminiscent of a story about a kid named Jack Jablonski, who about 5 years ago was playing high school hockey, checked into the boards, suffered a spinal injury, is not able to walk now, paralyzed from about the chest down. And we just see too many cases of these. And I so appreciate what everybody is doing. Have you seen the amount that people are donating now?
It's pretty great. And the Wild and Blackhawks have both put up a joint auction to try to raise funds for the Olson family, who you can imagine the amount of costs that they have to deal with beyond whatever insurance is going to cover and the recovery aspect of young Mr. Olson's life. But both teams offering experiences. I think the Wild were offering something where you could fly on the team plane.
They both are. Just,
oh, they both are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you have a day with the team. You have dinner with Savard. But the let me just go through the values of these. I mean, I'm sure you've looked at it too. Travel with the Wild, $4,600 is the current bid.
That's great.
Take-home chef, $1,100. Wild player for a day, $2,000.
Now you get to take a Minnesota Wild player home?
I'm not sure how that works exactly.
Negotiate on your own if you're the winner.
$5,000 for the Blackhawks player for a day.
And oh,
the list goes on like that. I mean,
can we enter?
which Tinder thing, Andrea? If that's what
which one would you pick, Andrea?
All of them. I like them all equally.
Yeah. Do you have a new Blackhawk that you like of all the new Blackhawks that have shown up?
I like the bread man. He's a little young, though. I could be his mom. Or I could be his older sister.
Yeah. No, that's cougar time for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you remember when the Blackhawks first came to WGN and we had that meeting there in the conference room and we were meeting these players for the first time and they are so young.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not really big, you know?
No.
I mean, and so I'm standing there, and everybody's got suits on from the Blackhawks, and some of the players did too. And I came up to Patrick Kane, and I asked him if he could get me a drink because I thought
he was an intern.
Yes, he looks, he's got this fresh face, pimply kid. I go, hey, can you get me?
That's tremendous. Patrick.
He's making $5 million.
I'd never do that story. That is tremendous.
Could you get me a drink, please?
John, did you then say, I'll grab you a drink, Patrick? What do you need?
He did, but he flipped it between his legs, caught it on a stick, and handed it to me. So I knew he was something special.
You know the annual bowling thing they do? So the second or third year that Kaner was with the Blackhawks, probably the second year, I'm in the bowling thing, and I leave. And, you know, everybody's done this. It wasn't just me. I get into the elevator with my bowling shoes still on. And
nice.
It's just me and Kaner in the elevator with my daughter, and we're in the elevator, and Kaner looks at me, and he looks down at my shoes, and he looks at me, and he goes, "Forget anything?"
Smarty pants.
Yeah,
I didn't know he was subtle that way. That's pretty good.
Yeah, they're all. That's the great thing about the hockey guys. Men, a few words, but most of them matter.
Yeah, I suppose so.
At WGN King John and your Saturday show here, we love it. By the way, you know my son deserted me the other day, but your son.
I heard.
Your son, who does some great work here, is really impressive. Mm-hmm. And I think without him on your show, you're a dead man. I think he really makes you better.
Thank you for noticing that. At the end of the show, we do the Vibe Score segment where we take – and by the way, it's your son who coined Score the News, mm-hmm. not Swipe Left, Andrea, or Swipe
I know. I know.
That's where your head is. And
score
that's
the
fine.
News.
Score the News. And so then we all kind of chime in on what our scores for various topics and things are, and Griff participates in that, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's very good.
He's great.
How are things in Minneapolis-St. Paul?
You know, pretty good, Steve. We got a good gig up here. We love living up here, although, shoot, I love living in Chicago, too, but you can only be in one place, right? So this is where my job is right now, my Monday through Friday gig, and we like it up here.
Well,
had
just
a nice winter, too.
Yeah, and by the way, a nice winter for Minnesota. Exceptionally nice. Did you guys have snow cover the whole winter? You didn't, did you?
We did not. It was so weird because in the past it would be about now that it would just all start to melt. And
right
now, yesterday we just got a little bit of snow that is going to melt today. So it's been lucky. We've been lucky this winter.
You know, I was there for 5 years, and I love the Twin Cities. I moved here for the weather. Yeah, that's a true story. For sure.
In Chicago, yeah. And so, the traffic, too, I hear, yeah.
So, John Williams, every afternoon on WCCO. Final question, Dave Ennett.
Yes, John, I know this is a little bit down the road here, and I don't want to get too far ahead. But
do you need a spotter, please? Yeah, say
November
yes.
19th at TCF Bank there. Stadium. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Go Cats.
11-19 TCF. Do I get to do some of the color commentary?
Why don't you put him on?
He's great. Yeah. I did last time.
Yeah, he did in the last game, and I got freeze? So I didn't freeze. I didn't shut up.
It was early.
That's great.
Yeah, it was earlier in the year.
He turned to me and he said, "You need to still do the stats thing." And I wasn't spotting for him anymore. I was just talking freeform.
He kind of took over.
I took some calls.
He turned to Ennett and said, "Can you go get me a drink?"
It's a game. It's not a talk show. All right, man. Thanks for doing this, Dave. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Andrea.
Bye, John.
Vibe
See you, John.
Score.
See you, John.
Check it out again. Vibe Score in your Apple Store or your Google Play Store on Android. 8:54. Steve Cochran Show. We continue next on 720 WGN. By the way, we should mention that the Wild Blackhawks co-auction for Matt Olson continues through. I think it's March 30th. Noon on March 30th. Go to ChicagoBlackhawks.com/Mo3 or Wild.com/Mo3 or our website at WGNRadio.com where we link everything that we do here. Dave, I have bad news for you, and I don't know how to tell you other than to just tell you.
Okay, tell me. Break it to me gently.
A new study in the Journal of Alcohol and Drugs.
Why did I have a feeling this was going to be something along that line?
This is probably going to make you want to have a drink. A Journal of the Studies of Alcohol and Drugs at the University of Victoria in British Columbia received 87 previous studies on the relationship between health and lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
And they say alcohol consumption, previously thought to be a positive, whether it be the effect of wine on your heart or the effect of a drink to stimulate your immunity, is all a big pile of BS.
Really?
Drinking is a negative health impact. Mostly contributory factors include that no one has any discipline when it comes to drinking and that most people never approach drinking as a healthy thing to do with a glass of wine a night. And people who start drinking tend to have trouble ceasing drinking. So the negative health impact of all of the above goes way beyond the positive impact if you followed the directives previously issued.
Okay, but
what?
if you
what don't you understand about that?
If you have discipline,
a glass of wine, yeah, but nobody does.
That's not true. I think people do.
How would you know you're drunk?
Don't say that.
Oh.
I'm kidding. Dave's sober today.
Right now.
Moderate drinkers may have led otherwise healthy lifestyles that contributed to them being in better health at the time than non-drinkers, which contributed to the study results as well. So, Mary, again, it's very simple. If I tell you to have a glass of wine a night that it's good for you and you just have one glass of wine, it's fine. But you come home, and what are you going to do, Mary? You're going to be knee-deep in your fifth
bottle.
Depends
on the day.
She's going to take a nap in the car first.
Yeah.
Could you save that and run it by Dr. Most on Monday morning?
On Monday, sure. Yeah,
okay, thank you.
Yeah, do you remind me? I promise you.
You're
going
to forget by Monday? You're not even going to be here. So
that's a good point. I'll be off Monday.
We'll ask him.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, though, when it comes to drinking, Mary, can you pre-sleep it off? Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's never like Mary tried
naps
that one.
Before she drinks?
Work ahead of schedule?
Yeah.
I don't think that works
probably
that way.
Not. We continue with hour number four of the Steve Cochran Show. Show number 615, Todd Furman. He's one of the great odds makers of all time. You can find him. Is he still doing Sportsline? Is that the best place, Kevin, to find him, to find Furman? I mean, I suppose I could actually ask him.
You could ask him. He's on the line here. Yeah. Let's see. I've got it.
Co-host of Bet the Board. And listen, he's really good. We're back in a tournament today. And there's nobody better than Todd Furman to talk about. You know, Todd, if I'm going to bet the kids milk money today, who do you like?
Well,
the first thing I have to do in my due diligence and tell you, responsible gaming is the name of our business. So I have to preach, you know, hey, save a little bit of that milk money in case things go awry. But
good point.
If you're looking to try and find the best bet of the four games today, I actually think Maryland is seriously undervalued. You can grab the Terrapins at 6.5-point dogs. You look at the way they perform in the opening weekend. The fact that they were able to beat Hawaii as comfortably as they did, going 1 of 18 from deep, a little bit of regression this week. I think Mello Trimble pushes Kansas to the brink and maybe knocks off the Jayhawks in the biggest upset of the Sweet 16.
I think that's probably a really good call because I think Maryland's been undervalued. And, Dave, you watch these guys all year long.
Yeah, yeah, that's one I've been looking at. And, Todd, I agree with you. I think Maryland, when they're on, they can beat anybody. The problem is that late in the season in the Big Ten, they had some bumps. They didn't play especially well going into the tournament, but yeah, the fact they were able to use their defense to beat Hawaii the way they did without the shots falling from outside is pretty impressive.
I think that's the one thing, especially this time of year. We know that these players can get tight. They may be unfamiliar venues that they're heading into. So if you can rely on your defense to offset those 4 or 5 minute inevitable offensive droughts you're going to go through, that becomes the one constant. And you're exactly right. You talk about Maryland and their struggles late in the year in Big Ten play, but they started to show a little bit more. Their game against Michigan State in the conference tournament really opened my eyes, and how quickly the casual bettor and fan forgets. Maryland was actually the preseason favorite to cut down the nets in Houston. You look at the Terps, they were 7-1 way back in November.
Wow. Who's the kid that was supposed to deliver this year and maybe be player of the year that's been real spotty for Maryland?
Well, Mello Trimble is their sophomore point guard, and then they got a freshman center, Diamond Stone.
In his first game,
he was from Milwaukee. In his first game in the Big Ten, he had like 39 points and 20-some rebounds, I think, against Penn State.
But real spotty, right? Up, down, not always consistent?
It's been a little bit inconsistent for him. I think, though, the Maryland team on a whole, you look at about a 6-week stretch from the middle of January until towards the end of the regular season. This was a team that bettors really didn't want to back. They were looking to go against them with alarming regularity. And oftentimes, that's what the professionals will try and identify, a team that's undervalued in the market. And I think that's the scenario we're seeing tonight against Maryland.
At Todd Furman, F-U-H-R-M-A-N, Todd Steak, S-T-A-K-E, Todd Steak. .com. These aren't like Trump steak. Steak is STAKE, ToddSteak.com. What about Duke, Oregon?
This is a game where you have some money coming in on both sides. It's been fascinating to try and watch the movement. Oregon opened up as a 2-point favorite. Number got as high as 3 before there's been a little bit of resistance. The total has actually taken some money. That opened at 156, climbed as high as 159, has come back to 156 where it initially started. You look at this Duke team, the second half against Yale, it appeared as they'd never seen a press or any semblance of pressure, with the Bulldogs basically trimming that 23-point halftime deficit into a 3-possession game late. You look at Oregon on the other side, the Pac-12 hasn't exactly been the best representative as far as an overall conference, with one team getting into the Sweet 16. For me, I think Duke, having been there, done that, if my feet are forced to the fire, would lean towards the Blue Devils catching 3. But I worry that Oregon will throw a lot of athletes at them, and if Duke shots aren't falling from deep, the Blue Devils won't find it easy to score in the interior.
A&M, Oklahoma. A&M, of course, probably shouldn't even be here.
Yeah, pretty fortunate if you look at the Aggies, the largest comeback in college basketball history, not just the tournament, in knocking Northern Iowa off last weekend. This number, the biggest movement of the four games today. OU opened as a 1.5-point favorite. You're now out to 3. Total 145 to 146.5. And the thing about it, the books will be rooting for A&M. About 8 out of every 10 tickets on this game coming in on Buddy Hield and company. I think A&M, if they can get to the offensive glass and keep this game close, now you're playing with house money. I actually like the Aggies in this spot.
And our friend Chuck Todd, Miami grad, has Miami going all the way to the title because he's a homer. Villanova wins that game, don't they, today?
I'm on the other side of this one. I think look at the conferences that these two teams hail from, and Miami going 13-5 in the ACC, a little bit more impressive than Villanova's resume. You look at what the Wildcats have done since January 1st. Yes, they beat Xavier on New Year's Eve, but their biggest wins have come against the likes of Providence, Butler, and Seton Hall. And while those are good quality wins, it's nowhere near the caliber of competition the Hurricanes have faced. And then you look at what Nova did last weekend, disposing of UNC Asheville and Iowa, shooting roughly 59% from the floor. If there's anything close to regression for Jay Wright's team, it comes today. And I think Miami their ability with their guards to put pressure on Nova, who wants to spread the floor. I think Miami takes out Villanova. You won't need the points in this one.
Todd, we got a couple of games here in Chicago tomorrow. I want to ask you about those, but I'm really intrigued by the matchups in the East. And I the game that I most want to see of the Sweet 16 is Notre Dame-Wisconsin, along with that North Carolina-Indiana game. I think those are two really interesting matches.
I think the Syracuse-Gonzaga game.
Well, that could be. Yeah, that could be the game here.
I can tell you from speaking to some of the sportsbook operators, both here in town and offshore, that the Indiana-North Carolina game, as far as overall betting handle is concerned, maybe the most heavily bet game, not only of this weekend, but the entire tournament, with two blue bloods going into battle in prime time on Friday night. And you look at that number, Carolina 5.5-point favorite, total there 158.5. Indiana really opened some eyes for most of the country with the way that they were able to beat Kentucky, using their defense more so than their offense to get it done. I think Carolina just too strong inside. But, guys, my number makes this 5.5, so this is one I'll watch as a fan without an investment. Wisconsin-Notre Dame, you mentioned, and you look at this Badgers team, the one constant for them has been their defense. They're actually 13-3 to the under in games played away from the Kohl Center this year. I think with Notre Dame, though, defensively, not nearly as stout as what Wisconsin encountered throughout Big Ten play. And for me, I really believe that Notre Dame's got to get Wisconsin out of the half-court game as best as possible. Not that easy to do. Feels like a coin flip on the side, but I think the game goes over the total at 131.
How about Syracuse-Gonzaga?
Interesting. Everyone wants to talk about Gonzaga as an 11 seed, but this will actually be the third time this tournament the Bulldogs are installed as a favorite. They closed as modest 1.5-point favorites in their opening win against Seton Hall and also in their win against Utah. And it's been defensively what they've been able to do. Mark Few's team seems to play better basketball when there aren't expectations. You have seen money, though, from the professionals take this number at 5 at the peak down to 4. I think this game is a little bit lower scoring than the 135 indicates. The Q's knows they can't run up and down the court with Gonzaga all day. They'll have to try and bunker into a half-court set.
And I assume most people think Virginia is going to use that defense, keep Iowa State's big offensive number down?
Yeah, people leaning toward that way, about 65% of the public action coming on Virginia. The total, though, 141, indicates that Iowa State may be able to get buckets with a little bit more regularity than we've seen against the Cavs. My biggest fear here is if Virginia gets down, do they have enough offense to get back in the game? But if they're able to play from the catbird seat, they should be okay. And Virginia, you talk about a team who benefited the most from a Cinderella-laden first round, them not having to draw Michigan State to get to Houston, probably a blessing in disguise.
Since you don't have to spend any money on it between now and the end, who's your ultimate winner as you sit here on Thursday morning?
For me, I have to stay true to who I picked before the tournament, and I'll ride North Carolina despite some erratic guard play. I think that they're going to go out on top, just the most complete team and deepest side from top to bottom.
Listen, if you make any money, it's because Todd told you. And, of course, you have to split it all with Dave. Mm-hmm. Todd Furman, and again, at Todd Furman, F-U-H-R-M-A-N, toddstake.com. And what's the disclaimer we're supposed to say, Todd, to do the right thing?
Make sure you keep money aside and treat gambling as a form of recreation. The lifestyle it takes, boys, to turn this into a profession comes with sacrifices that most of the listeners probably don't want to embark on.
Right. Todd's on wife number 9. I don't know if you know that or not. Larry King called Larry King called Todd and said, slow down. So you're a good man, Todd. Thank you for getting up.
Thank you for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Thanks, Todd. And that's a guy who you have heard regularly on not just the beat, but, man, Todd's been on this station going back to, got to be Cap and Waddle almost, I would think.
Yeah, he's been with us for a while. And
yeah.
He breaks it all down very succinctly.
Whatever happened to Cap and Waddle? Did they ever get their green cards?
Code is Studley. We're fine.
920 back after this on 720 WGN. $9.25, Andrea, back from Arizona. What was the best part of your trip?
Oh, the weather.
Do you want to elaborate?
No, I missed you guys so much. No, it was, it was beautiful, the weather. I saw a couple of spring training games, played some golf, got some dining tips from Ryan Sandberg. It was a good trip, overall. Good times.
Good time I had by all. And while you were out, a couple things happened here, but the most important thing that happened here is we have new chairs in the studio.
I see this, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty colors, too.
And if I could speak for your rump, Dave, our behinds haven't been this happy in quite some time.
I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah. I lost a note on who we need to thank for these.
The chair guy.
Kevin McDonough in our sales department. He has the information. Just to let Kevin know. Let our Kevin know.
Is one of the chairs already missing?
Are we missing a chair?
Oh, no.
Two, three.
I have one.
Four, five.
Steve has one. Dave has one.
I think there's two blue, right? Were there two blue?
Yeah, I have a blue.
And I'm in a gray.
I've got a blue. It's really comfortable.
Oh,
yeah,
Kevin,
but that's
has
a different
fourth.
Blue. There were two of those.
That's
blues.
The one Steve couldn't figure out how to go up and down.
I've got the cool one.
No, there was another blue chair. Unless, oh, you're sitting in it. You have your jacket on.
No, this isn't blue.
It's not blue?
No, it's not one of the blue.
No,
ones.
That's black. Are you guys colorblind?
Should we put music on and play musical chairs?
No, we're missing.
No, we're missing one of the blue chairs. But I think because the one that Kevin's in, the one that Kevin's in wasn't here yesterday. I think they may have swapped one of these out.
Oh, I bet they did.
Yeah, they're giving us a like an old country buffet of chairs to check out.
Yeah.
It's like a test drive.
Yeah.
Or test sit.
So we'll get an appropriate plug for them before the show's over so we don't get the name wrong. At 9:27, when we come back, we'll do the big story. We have still some other stories that we need to get to before 10 o'clock. Some of them important, some of them ridiculous. And then Bill and Wendy will be here at 10 o'clock. No correlation between the word ridiculous and Bill and Wendy on at 10. But I think Wendy's off today, right? True or not true?
I don't know. I'll check with Kevin McDonough and get back to you.
Kevin McDonough knows that, too?
He knows that, too.
Wow. He should probably spend some more time selling. Let's come back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
9:42, our friend Steve Burness in the Better Business Bureau is here. Condolences on your mom.
Well, thank you very much.
It's a difficult situation for anybody to go through, so yeah. It's nice to see you here.
She's resting best now your comfortably. Family. She's not suffering anymore.
So tonight's a big night for the Better Business Bureau.
Correct.
And it's a big night for Andrea Darlis.
Right. We have our 90th anniversary tonight, a celebration. But being that as well, we're giving Andrea our highest award to the media, which is our Diogenes Award, which really is given to individuals who really exemplify the goals and the principles of the Better Business Bureau, especially in being a huge advocate of the organization. Over the years, I've been on countless radio shows with Andrea and on touting about the BBB and really what consumers need to be watch out for so they don't get scammed.
I can tell you that we worked on it this morning. We've taken her acceptance speech down to 45 minutes.
Oh,
is
it.
That good?
Yeah. But she's talking about my quality, so 44 minutes is fine.
Right, right, right. She's going over your leadership.
My leadership qualities.
44 seconds, maybe.
Oh, whoa.
but it's a very nice award. We're going to be there tonight to cheer you on.
I know. Thank you guys very much. I'm very honored and humbled, and, you know, an organization like the Better Business Bureau is for the betterment of everybody.
Correct. What do you worry most about today?
Today, complaints-wise, basically IRS scams is still the number one scam. It's 2014, 2015, and it's getting that way in 2016. The reason it's happening, Steve, is because it continues to work. People are fearful of the IRS, so they see the phone light up, and it says IRS, and they get scared. And a lot of people I've talked to over the years, what I really found out, some people cheat on their taxes a little bit
what?
In some way.
Dave.
Some people. Dave.
Wow, poor Dave.
And what happens, though, they feel they got caught. So they just want to get rid of it as fast
sure.
as possible. And that's usually what happens. But, again, we had a woman that lost about $10,000 a couple months ago, and they kept her on the phone almost 2 hours. They stayed on the phone with her while she went to a local retail store to get the card to put the money on it. It's unbelievable that they're getting away with it. They're not here in the U.S. They're somewhere in a coffee shop, somewhere across the pond somewhere, and they're stealing people's money.
Well, here's what you need to know. The IRS doesn't call.
They don't call.
They also don't take your calls, but that's a different
that's
problem.
That's true, both. Yeah. and they won't demand money immediately. Nobody does.
No.
Any agency, because we had complaints against Commonwealth Edison. They said they're going to shut my power off if I don't pay in a half hour.
That doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. What we call the tip-off to the rip-off is an advance fee. You got to pay me now, and we'll tell you it later on, and that's the key. But if consumers would just take the time and go to our website, we have now a scam tracker installed in there, so we can report scams anywhere in the U.S., and it's a heat map, so you can tell where the scams are happening in the U.S. If you were to type in IRS, it would explode with revelations from other consumers saying don't do it. But again, people think the Better Business Bureau is just as a complaint agency. They come to complain about it when it's too late. Once you give them that debit card with that money on there, it's like opening the window, throwing the money out, kiss it goodbye.
Where do we rank in Illinois compared to the rest of the country for scams?
We're up there. Again, not all scams are reported.
I don't mean the government. No, I don't mean Springfield. I mean like actual criminals.
We're very high up there as well. But again, most people don't report scams. If people have been scammed, they're embarrassed. We had a woman who finally reported a scam. She almost lost $100,000. She did lose $100,000, but wasn't going to do it, and her kids forced her to do it. So I don't know the true scam count. Again, people, if they would just, consumers would just check first, they wouldn't be scammed. It's almost like the panacea to some degree. Again, we can't eliminate everything, but if you would call us first, we tell you what others have gone through and what the pitfalls are.
You ever been IRS scammed?
I am. I called Steve. It was that day, and I think it must have been media day, because I think Tracy Butler got the call. I got the call.
Pam Zekman.
Pam Zekman.
Yeah, right.
I got it. I had a
voice. Hold on a second.
They left me a voicemail.
They called Pam Zekman?
Yeah.
Right. Wow, is that a bad idea?
I knew it was a scam, but it was a voicemail. It was a recorded, wink, wink message saying, this is the IRS. And now I had been audited in the past, and I thought, oh no, here we go again. And then, 2 seconds later, I thought, wait, this is the scam. Call Steve. And as soon as he picked up the phone, he said, you got the IRS scam, didn't you? He said, it's media day. It must be going around.
It's going around like crazy.
What'd you call Pam Zekman? Pam Zekman.
I don't think they know any better.
She'll expose you.
Pam Zekman will find out where you are. She'll show up. You'll open the door. You'll look down because she's short, and then she'll beat the hell out of you.
She'll find the hotel.
She'll find them. She'll find them as well.
Yes, she will.
They don't use recordings anymore. Now they threaten you, so they're actually live calls now. So in the past, you see recordings. Now it's the guy saying, "I'm gonna come there in a half hour. I'm gonna have the sheriff come there, arrest you, deport you, take your license away." It just scares people.
And we need to talk. You need to talk to your mom, your dad, your grandparents in particular, because they trust.
Right.
They trust and they think they've done something wrong when somebody's aggressive with them on the phone.
Exactly.
You will get a certified letter from the IRS if there's problems. How do I know? I've gotten a couple.
I think we all have.
Yeah, I've gotten a couple. And the certified letter from the IRS is something you should open.
Exactly. And read it.
And you should read it and deal with it.
Deal with it. But it's days later. It's like 30 days later, you have up to 30 days to report to them. Anything immediacy to it, that's the scam. And anything wiring money outside the country, that is, again, what we call the tip-off to the rip-off.
Yeah, and if somebody calls and says, I'm going to give you $100,000, but I need you to send me $300 first. Stop.
It works.
Just stop.
It works. Unfortunately, consumers have to stop. You're right, Steve. And I wish everybody would tell their grandparents, like you said, the fathers, mothers, siblings, everybody about these scams and to contact the Better Business Bureau first. We have all this information. I've been doing this almost 29 years. That's my biggest frustration in my job, is that people call me, I've been scammed. You could have called me 5 minutes earlier. I could have told you no, and you would have saved $100,000. It's really one of my biggest frustrations.
And I can tell you right now, the fastest way to get people off the phone is to say, I've got another phone. If you could hold on a second, I just want to make a quick call to the Better Business Bureau to verify who you
are.
Click.
That's all you have to
click.
Do.
Click. Gone.
Anytime you ask questions in any way, shape, or form, they hang up on you because they know you're checking them out. Charity fraud, same thing. They'll keep on a phone and try to get you some money and say, let me check on your charity. Send me something. Click. They hang up because they know that you're going to take the time to do the research. Why bother? Go to the next sucker. There's a sucker born every second.
I was going to ask you about charity scams, too, because it always happens after Paris. Everybody, of course, rallied, wanted to send donations. Anytime there's any sort of a tragedy, disaster, and I've already seen
police
support Brussels, the families and et cetera. They're starting funds. You have to make sure that they're legitimate charities and the funds are going to go to the victims.
The key is to ask for something in writing on those charities, because they pop up. The GoFundMe pages already popped up for families. But really, for the charities that call you, send me something in writing. Show me that you are capable of handling a disaster. What are you going to do with the money, not just spend it as well? Because remember, the Attorney General last year took action on a charity, cancer. All the Attorney General sued a cancer organization that was duping consumers out of lots and lots of money.
My daughter was considering hiring a thesis coach. The thesis coach business is fairly large. She's finishing her master's, and she was looking at various places, and she brought up to me, she goes, how do you know you're dealing with somebody legitimate? This goes to the larger question of legitimate businesses. If somebody has a question now about whether or not a business is legitimate, how do they use the Better Business Bureau?
Well, they call us our office. We have about reports on about 125,000 organizations, and again, 4 million internationally. And at that point, we tell the consumer what we know about them in the last 3 years, and we grade companies. So regardless if they're accredited by the Better Business Bureau or not, we still grade organizations, and we go A+ to F, just like a regular grading school system.
So if you've received complaints about somebody, even if they've not been
previously graded by you, that's a negative for them, obviously.
It's a negative for them as well. We look for governmental action. We look at that they have a license and things of that nature, if they're required to have a license. So there's some due diligence on our part to make certain that these businesses are registered and that they say what they do. But most of the time, our reports are based upon a number of complaints filed by them. And we do customer reviews now, too. So we take that into factor in consideration when we do the star ratings of organization, because organizations now have star ratings.
Is a phone call better than a search?
I prefer the online. Online's faster, and okay. It's 24-hour access, and we have a database that's interconnected with all the Better Business Bureaus we have in Canada. We just opened one in Mexico City, so we're an international organization. We have over 4 million businesses. Again, Steve, as I said before, people call us after the fact. It is probably the biggest frustration.
Before.
Call before. 10 seconds it takes you. It's free of charge, and again, we're not the end-all place to go, but check. And one other place to go, where I always suggest consumers do, not only the Better Business Bureau, but go to a search engine, put the company's name in or the individual's name in,
yeah,
and put the word scam next to it.
You'll see.
It goes through all the blogs and looks and say, has anybody else written about this individual, man or woman, about it? But again, people do that after the fact.
Can any business become accredited?
They can be, but okay. We deny organizations, too. They have to meet our standards. We're a standards-based organization, so you have to meet and maintain those. So they can call and join the organization, subscribe to our standards, and have lived up to them. About 6 years ago, an organization, a board member, my boss, sued me in the court, both individually and the Better Business Bureau, because we're pulling that seal away from him because he didn't meet our standards. He thought, board member, he can do whatever he wants. And I told him, you have to, and I'll sue you. And he did. 2 weeks later, it went after me personally and the organization. We ultimately won. He withdrew the suit. But that shows you, when that seal, the Better Business Bureau seal, we mean trust and integrity in that business. If not, we take it away. But again, you have to remember, the con artists steal that seal as well. So if you see it on a website that says you can make money stuffing envelopes, $100,000 a week, check with the Better Business Bureau first, because you see it on the internet, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Yeah, $100,000 a week for envelopes seems high.
It does.
Do you know what the new envelope scam I think is, maybe, Steve? Is Twitter. Have you seen this? And I think this targets the millennials. They'll say, hey, you can make $1,000 a week tweeting about whatever it might be. Like, we need your help. You can make $1,000 a week doing it. Well,
it's...
Yeah, if you got nine followers, it's probably not a legitimate thing.
Exactly.
With website for BBB?
BBB.org. It's pretty simple. Before you buy or hire, BBB it.
And I look forward to seeing you later today.
Thank you very much. Congratulations again.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you both very much.
9:53, Bill and Wendy coming up.